is crackling, everybody. Welcome on in to the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look ahead to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs and breaking down what we want to use for daily fantasy football. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, the top offenses in the league, back on the slate, no longer do we have to worry about the Ravens defense and the Bears defense. Things much brighter as we enter this Thursday. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm excited for some good football. I don't really have a more creative adjective. I'm just ready. I was not super enthused last weekend watching some of those games. And it's good that we actually have, you know, three viable tight ends on the slate. We have more than, you know, one wide receiver that we can feel confident in, or I guess two last week maybe. But
are the three tight ends Travis Kelce, Eric Ebron, and Gerald Everett?
Certainly not Rob Gronkowski.
And not Zach Ertz. No, I'm just kidding. Zach Ertz is fine.
We'll get there. Tough matchup, but
I don't want to start things off on a bad note here. So, yeah, I think it's a fun slate. You actually do have options. Defense, though, Brandon, a little bit tougher for this week, and that's gonna I think be the trouble point for me as we look at this slate.
Defense is always my weak point.
Yeah, it's tough. Last week I got lucky. I think the Chargers are probably a bad process play. But I kind of had the thought that the Chargers would win that game. And so I had a lot of Melvin and a lot of Chargers. So I don't think the process was there, but I lucked my way into it. And I'd like to, you know, dip back into that luck bank again here for the divisional round if I could.
Yeah, if you know, like, what pick you need to have made to be considered lucky, just let me know.
Yeah, let's go with the Chiefs this week, not Colts. Oof, that was very close to being very bad. Let's go Chiefs defense this week for the luck bank. Cool for you?
Because they're facing Andrew Luck? Is that the logic?
No, I've flipped my tune on Andrew Luck. He's awesome, and I like him a lot, and I'm very happy that he's succeeding.
No, I just meant the luck.
He's good now. Oh, I get it. Oh, ha ha.
It's early.
We're recording like an hour earlier than usual, so we need to. And I was off sweeping off cars this morning because it's snowing here, so we need a little bit of a curve here,
yeah,
as we get going. But we'll wrap things up for sure. Yeah,
yeah. With the four games too, it's like I'm super like zoned in and like hyper specific, right. So I'm missing like some big picture stuff. So I'm sure I'll miss a joke or two as well.
Yeah, for sure. Before we take a look at all four games, what we're going to do today is break down all four games, our thoughts on them, and try to give some broader context towards the slates. Do you want to mention our iTunes winner for this past month? I forgot to mention it last week because I'm an idiot, but our winner for NumberFire Premium for an entire year is Nathan 2775. If you left a comment on our iTunes page under the name Nathan 2775, hit me up, jim@numberfire.com. That's jim@numberfire.com. We'll get you hooked up with NumberFire Premium for an entire year. We do draw a drawing for this every month on the podcast. So get those submissions in. Go to iTunes, search for the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, leave a comment, and rate the podcast. And as long as you are not currently a NumberFire Premium subscriber, we'll get you hooked up with NumberFire Premium for an entire year. Nathan 2775 is our winner for the month of January. And just as a note before we look at the first game here, So I think both Brandon and I tend to, in these situations, play the full four-game slate. Am I speaking out of turn there, Brandon?
No, that's correct.
Okay, so we're playing the four-game slate here. And on FanDuel, technically the main slates are the Saturday and the Sunday-only slates. We're going to, whenever we cite salaries, we'll be discussing the Saturday through Sunday slates. They do have different salaries for the two, but based on our styles, we're going to play the full four-game slate whenever we can. It's not the main slate, but there's still pretty good contests out there.
Don't get me wrong. I will play the Saturday only, the Saturday main and the Sunday main. But, yeah, my priority is the four-game slate.
In the Saturday main, if you do well there, you know, you can dump, you can funnel more money into the Sunday, because that's exactly the way you should play these things. Definitely not a losing strategy. Definitely not what happened to me on Sunday morning. But I think for both of us, we like having the ability to play all four games. So when we talk about a salary on FanDuel, it will be from the full four-game slate. Let's start things off here with the Saturday slate, though. Focusing on the Colts and the Chiefs, this game, total of 57, the Chiefs, five-point favorites. And we can talk about this, Brandon, but I'm kind of surprised the line is that small. I'll get your thoughts on that in a second. Winds in Arrowhead, 9 miles per hour. Weather is 33 degrees at opening kickoff. I wouldn't worry too much about that personally. I know that the Colts are an indoor team. We'll talk about their abilities on the road in a second, but I wouldn't fret too much about the temperature for this game. Injuries for this one: T.Y. Hilton has not practiced the first 2 days this week, but it's kind of become the norm for him. He's still expected to suit up here. On the Chiefs side, both Spencer Ware and Sammy Watkins were limited in practices on Tuesday and Wednesday. Ware has missed the past three games, and Watkins has not played more than 5 snaps since week 9. Ware may have a diminished role, even if he does play, but Watkins is a name we'll have to monitor. And in the Chiefs secondary, Eric Berry was limited in practice Tuesday, but then dropped to a non-participant on Wednesday. That does not bode well for him, and would be a slight downgrade for the Chiefs defense. They played without him basically the entire year, but it would hurt not to have him out there against Andrew Luck. Brandon, what are your initial thoughts on this game? And I said that I was surprised the line was only Chiefs by 5. I assumed it would be higher. What are your thoughts on that and this game in general?
Yeah, so I was looking specifically into that line, and on sportsinsights.com, you can sort of track where the percentage of the bets are coming in, and how that affects the line. And I mean, the line opened sort of as a consensus at 4 points, and then it trended up with some wagers on the Chiefs up to 6, and then it's trended back down to 5. But I'm with you. I think it should be Chiefs by a little bit more than 5, maybe not much, but it's possible that we're just sort of forgetting how good the Chiefs can be. I know that they're sort of defining factor, if you really dig in, is that they have lost two really good teams and just like destroyed the decent teams. But I'm not necessarily sold on the Colts just yet. They've also had a pretty easy go of things. This game's in Arrowhead as well. But I think overall, I'm with you. I think this is a game where the Colts will be playing from behind as opposed to last week when they got out ahead.
The last 2 weeks, yeah. I think that that's going to be a big key here, because Marlon Mack in that game against the Texans played 81% of the snaps. He had 24 carries and 3 targets. Jordan Wilkins played just 7 snaps. Naheem Hines, who I had a little bit too much of, was at 9 snaps. The week before that, week 17, also a must-win game, Mack played 67% of the snaps against the Titans. But they also won that game pretty steadily. So I think the question is, if you think that Marlon Mack is becoming a workhorse back for this team and his workload the past 2 games is not due to game script, then getting him against a weaker rush defense at $7,300 would be intriguing. But, you know, we do have to keep in mind that they had grotesquely positive game script in both of those games. And I think that Marlon Mack is good in the passing game, but I'm not fully convinced yet that he become or stays their go-to back when they're trailing. So Mack is $7,300. Naheem Hines is once again all the way down at $5,200. I don't think I can have a lot of Naheem Hines, Brandon, but I think that there are scenarios in which I can go towards him and save that money at $5,200. Where do you sit with Mack and Hines, given the fact that we both think this is a game that the Chiefs do win?
Yeah, it's always tough for me, and this is why I try to be very objective with my player analysis. I wasn't as high on Marlon Mack as a lot of people were. I understand that Ryan Kelly came back, but just sort of overall, I'm not like a huge Marlon Mack guy just because I don't fully trust his role in the pass game involvement. So I want to be I think I'm a little bit lower than I probably should be, but when it comes to Hines, like, this is probably going to turn into more of a Naheem Hines game or, you know, a negative game script for the Colts. And look, the Chiefs are 32nd in adjusted rush defense based on number of yards metrics. They're 32nd in rushing success rate allowed to running backs, but they're also 30th in target success rate allowed to running backs. And if the Colts get down, you know, 14 points early, I don't think that Marlon Mack just gets to be able to run the ball as much as he has been the past few weeks with positive game script. Frank Reich said that, you know, he sort of knows the recipe is the throw to get ahead and then to run to protect the lead. So I don't think that he would just run the ball when they're trailing big.
And that's exactly what they did last week too, is they had Andrew Luck throwing quite a bit early last week. And then once they got up 21-7 or 21-0 and Deshaun Watson was struggling, they just rode Marlon Mack. And, you know, Frank Reich knows what he's doing. But I think against the Chiefs, that may lead to more Nyheim Hines. I can't go very heavy on him because we know the floor is 0 points, as we saw last week. But I think the ceiling is still like a 40% snap rate with seven or so targets. And in this matchup, in this offense, I think that is enough for me to feel okay about him. I think that the appeal behind Marlon Mack, I think that I also can't go super heavy on him because, like, I agree with you, where the role is not necessarily as sticky as it may seem, but the appeal with him is similar to the appeal with Zeke Elliott. If you run the football with Marlon Mack and Zeke Elliott, you increase the variance in the game because you reduce the number of plays the opposing team will be on the field. And given the fact that, like, I would assume that both the Chiefs and the Rams are decently heavy favorites in their respective games. If you are the underdogs, you want to increase the variance in this game. You want to keep Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff off the field. So there is incentive to run the football or at least play a slower paced game, which could lead to more rush attempts. And Mac's role is not as locked in as Zeke. So I'm not trying to compare the two, but I think that they both have that going in their favor where it would make sense to try to play a slower paced game, which could lead to more rush attempts. So I think there is still cause for optimism around Mack, but there are definite pitfalls around him that make me a little bit concerned at $7,300. Let's talk about the Colts receivers here, Brandon. If we're looking at this Colts offense, I have concerns about them in general when they go on the road and play outdoors. If we look at them, since T.Y. Hilton returned in Week 7, Andrew Luck has averaged 0.22 passing net expected points per dropback on the road. That is compared to 0.47 when he's at home. So he's above average when he's on the road because the league average is 0.12. He's at 0.22, but he's much lower than he is at home. On top of that, two of those road games in that sample have been in Houston, which is also indoors. Now they go outdoors. They're facing a Chiefs team that, you know, their strength is their pass rush. And I think the Colts offensive line can neutralize that because they've been very good, but it's still very tough to play in Arrowhead. So I think, Brandon, I might wind up being underweight on a lot of the Colts pass catchers. What is your read on these guys here? And how are you assessing the Colts pass catchers in general and Andrew Luck?
Yeah, I think Andrew Luck is, I'm going to be underweight on him as well. I'm looking at the sort of the same things in terms of the road splits. It's hard with him because he's basically been two different players this year. When he sort of hit that, it was like at the quarter mark of the season or the, you know, 33% mark of the season where he really sort of turned things around. But in four games against top half pass defenses on the road, he's actually averaged negative 0.07 passing net expected points per dropback, 5.25 yards per attempt. But he's faced just one above average pass defense on the road since week 6. That came against the Jaguars in week 13 when he put up negative 0.17 passing net expected points per drop back. The Chiefs, you know, their strength is the pass rush, but they also have some good coverage on the outside. And I think that they could do enough to negate a banged up T.Y. Hilton where it gets a little bit too problematic for the Colts. And this is why, just another reason why I think the Chiefs get to play from ahead.
Yeah, I think that I'm in the same boat there. And I think the other thing with Andrew Luck is if we're looking at the four game slate, he is $300 less than Drew Brees. And I would much prefer Brees at home against the Eagles than Andrew Luck on the road against the Chiefs. I also like Jared Goff. We're talking about the Saturday only slate. So I think I will have some luck because the volume will be there. He is good enough to do well against any defense. So I'm going to have some, but I'd rather have Breeze. I'd rather have Goff. And of course, I'd rather have Mahomes too at $9,000. Let's talk about the Colts pass catchers here overall. If we look at them in the games since Jack Doyle got hurt and with Dontrell Inman active, T.Y. Hilton, 25% of the targets, Eric Ebron, 20%, Nyheim Hines, 14%, and Inman has 12%. Now, that sample does include one game where Inman had just one target, so a little bit lower there. Ebron has had 27% of the deep targets, but he hasn't caught a lot of those, I think it's the way to put that. It's been a rough go of it for Eric Ebron a bit. So I think if I'm looking at the pass catchers here, I do like T.Y. Hilton at $7,900, but I kind of think I'm also okay with taking the savings, jumping down to Inman at $6,200, or going with Ebron at $6,600. I don't think I'm going to have – I might have more Ebron than I have Hilton. I don't think I'll have more Inman, but I'm not forcing in T.Y. Hilton, I guess, is the way I'd phrase that.
Yeah, and there are, you know, last week it was, you know, more or less DeAndre Hopkins and T.Y. Hilton on that four-game slate, and then a lot of sort of question marks. That's not really the case this week, so it makes it easier to avoid T.Y. Hilton. I will, you know, I'm not fading him 100%, anything like that, but I'm not super sold on him. Dontrell Inman ran the same number of routes as T.Y. Hilton did last week, according to Pro Football Focus. At 89.2%, by comparison, Eric Ebron ran 81%. Now, in favor of Marlon Mack as a sort of a pass catcher, he ran about two-thirds of the routes and did have two red zone targets. Mm-hmm. But another name to keep in mind as sort of a two-game only sort of pick is Chester Rogers, who ran 60% of the routes, had five targets, and the Chiefs can be beatable in the slot, at least more vulnerable to the slot than on the outside. So he's a name to keep in mind. But yeah, I'm with you. Not really going to go out of my way to prioritize T.Y. Hilton outside of full-on game stacks here.
All right, let's move on here to the Chiefs side of things. I want to talk about their passing offense first. This Colts defense on this slate, they're the worst pass defense still alive. They rank 23rd against the pass based on number fires metrics. And the key in that is that number fires metrics adjust for schedule. And that is a huge thing for the Colts because the best quarterback they face this year in terms of per dropback efficiency was Tom Brady. He ranked 7th for the full season in passing net expected points per dropback. No other quarterback they faced ranked in the top 10. In that metric, Carson Wentz was 11th, but that was his first game back. Only 5 of the 17 games that they played were against top 20 passers, and 3 of those were against Deshaun Watson. He was 14th. So, like, outside of Deshaun Watson, it was Tom Brady and Carson Wentz and nobody else. So I don't think they've really been tested all that much. They allowed 43 points to Brady on the road, and now they go on the road to face Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes, $9,000 for the full slate. And there are a lot of studs I want to afford, and like I want to get to Travis Kelce, and I want to get Zeke Elliott, some Alvin Kamara in there, some Todd Gurley, but I still think Mahomes is worth his salary, Brandon. What about you for Patrick Mahomes? Is he a player you can afford on a slate where there are so many good players elsewhere?
I'm going to try. Yeah. And that really is going to sort of come down to getting more creative with my game stacks. There are some cheaper options we'll talk about throughout the other games. But, I mean, 3 home games against bottom half adjusted pass defenses based on number fires metrics for Mahomes. He's averaged 318 yards per game with 9 touchdowns, 2 picks, 0.57 passing net expected points per dropback, a 57% success rate, 9.44 yards per attempt. Like, those are video game numbers. And if you look at just all opponents, still above 300 yards per game, 19 touchdowns, 6 picks, 0.39 passing net expected points per drop back. He's just like at home, even though they're somehow like better on the road, he's still phenomenal. So yeah, I do think that Patrick Mahomes is worth that salary. It's not easy to get there necessarily, but
right.
You'd be kind of silly to say that he's just too expensive on a 4-game slate because he could break this slate open.
I think that Mahomes, the best analogy I can give is that he is like the Golden State Warriors for DFS, where I always like them, My one concern is that they get out in front too much and it's a blowout and they don't have to, you know, push it late in the game. This is a playoffs and that changes everything. And the Colts offense, I have my concerns around them beating the Chiefs, but they're good. They're going to score points in this game. And I think that keeps Andy Reid's foot on the gas pedal. Andy Reid playoff joke here. But like, I think that's not a concern for Mahomes. And that makes me even more willing to pay $9,000 for him. So I love Mahomes. The question for you, Brandon, is where do you go with the pass catchers? Because we have to look at this in two separate ways. One way is if we assume Sammy Watkins comes back. In that sample, before Watkins got hurt, in games where Watkins has played at least half this early, 75% of the snaps, Travis Kelce at 26% target market share, 32% of the deep targets, 25% of the red zone targets. He was still a monster, even when Watkins was healthy. So Kelce, to me, easily my favorite pass catcher in this offense. Tyreek Hill with Watkins, big splits with and without Watkins. In the games with Watkins playing at 75% of the snaps, Hill, 22% of the targets. That's compared to a 27% market share for Tyreek Hill. Since Sammy Watkins got hurt, his deep market share goes from 46% down to 38%. His red zone market share goes down as well. So I think looking at this two ways, if Sammy Watkins does sit, I will like Tyreek Hill because he's $8,400 and can bust open his slate. I'm not going to have him above Kelce because this Colts defense, their strength is limiting deep balls and preventing big plays. So I'm not going to have him above Travis Kelce regardless, but I will like him if Sammy Watkins does not play. I will be okay with him if Sammy Watkins does play. Where do you sit with these pass catchers, Brandon, based on whether or not Watkins plays?
I mean, Sammy Watkins' return, of course, would ding them a little bit, but you know, it's really Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and I don't think that they are going to be afterthoughts if Sammy Watkins returns in a home playoff game. The Colts, I've kind of heard that the Colts are a good deep ball defense, and it's true depending on how you measure it, but they're 14th in adjusted yards per attempt allowed on deep balls this season, which is, you know, fine, but we're talking about who the Colts have faced. If you sort of look at which receivers have gotten deep targets against them lately, DeAndre Hopkins had one last week. You know, I'm just going to skip over a lot of other names, but like, then they played the Titans. There were two deep attempts there. The Giants without Odell Beckham, the Cowboys, the Texans again, the Jaguars had two deep attempts against them. Like, none of these guys are Tyreek Hill, so I'm not overly concerned about Tyreek Hill's deep ball ability in this game. Andy Reid's had the you know, famous Andy Reid bye week to scheme some things up for Tyreek Hill. So yeah, it's still Hill, it's still Kelce for me, whether or not Sammy Watkins plays.
Where do you rank those two compared to each other?
Kelce over Hill.
Okay, I'd agree with that. Kelce is the lower salary guy at 75. Hill is 84. I'll take that for sure. So what about Watkins? Let's say that Watkins does play. Are you going to, you know, sprinkle him in at all at $6,000?
He would be a game stack only play, and he would help sort of pay up for Patrick Mahomes, and it makes sense if you're going to play Sammy Watkins, just play Mahomes and hope that he has, you know, the 5-touchdown game and Watkins gets one or two of them.
I think that the appeal in Sammy Watkins, if he does play, is that it's kind of like Kiki Cutie last week where, you know, teams may have success or relative success against the Colts on deep balls, but they don't throw the deep ball that often. And I think we saw that with Deshaun Watson last week, which is partially why we saw Cutie get so many targets, is that, you know, they were working underneath. Watkins, when he was healthy, didn't get a ton of deep targets, at least compared to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. So I think that he could help fill that role. For $6,000, I would be intrigued by that for sure. So I'd have some. I would not have a lot because foot injuries for receivers are frightening, but I'd have at least some in there for sure. The other guy I want to mention here, Brandon, before we move on and talk about our favorite game stack here, is Damian Williams. It sounds like Spencer Ware should play this game, but he practiced in full leading up to week 17 and was still inactive. Now, after a bye week, he has been limited in practice this week. I kind of still like Damian Williams. The past three games, he has had 11.3 rushes and 4.7 targets per game. That is 20.7 adjusted opportunities. Again, that is carries plus 2x targets to weigh in the proper value of a target relative to a carry for a running back. His snap rates in those games, 73%, 64%, 52%. And for $6,100, I kind of think that makes me like Damian Williams, regardless of whether or not Spencer Ware plays. I don't think he's not going to be like a core play for me, but I'd use him in game stacks. I would use him outside of game stacks if I had to save at running back. What's your read on Damian Williams here for this weekend?
Yeah, I like him, even if Spencer Ware plays. He actually got a two-year extension like 2 weeks ago.
That was kind of the first signal, I thought, that we should be okay with this guy.
Yeah, and look, the Colts are, they're 13th in adjusted rush defense based on number fires metrics. They're 7th in rushing success rate allowed to running backs, but they're 23rd in target success rate allowed to running backs.
They allow a lot of volume there, too.
What?
They allow a lot of volume to running backs as well out of the backfield.
Yeah. So that points to Williams over Spencer Ware. I think, frankly, Damian Williams is just better than Spencer Ware. So I don't think I'll have any Spencer Ware. Maybe, again, just like a weird game stack, like what if this happens sort of a scenario. But I like Williams quite a bit, especially relative to the running backs who aren't Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, and Alvin Kamara. I think I might put Damian Williams fourth this week.
I might do the same. Well, Melvin Gordon, I guess.
He's just so banged up. It's, I like him more than the problem.
Yeah, it is a problem, but he's $7,400, and I think they're going to win that game. So fight me. but yeah, I think I agree. Williams is at least in that tier for me. All right, favorite game stack, Brandon, go.
Favorite game stack, going to be pretty straightforward. Mahomes, Damian Williams, Travis Kelce, T.Y. Hilton.
Okay. I would go Mahomes, Kelce, and you're going to hate me, Eric Ebron. Let's put Ebron in the flex. And
I think that's viable this week.
Let's get a little weird. I don't like as many running backs this week, and I think that makes me more okay with it. If you want to get weird, I think that would help you differentiate while still stacking up this game. I'm not going to do that a lot, but I think it's a kind of a fun one. If I were going more like straight up, I guess more logical, and you didn't want to put a tight end in the flex because you don't hate money, I think that Mahomes, Kelce, Nyheim Hines is one that could work out as well. So I think that might be something I dabble in also. Before we take a look at the couch, go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm just going to throw in a sneakier stack just to give something a little bit more off the radar. It would be Mahomes, Spencer Ware, Nyheim Hines, and then sort of throw in whoever else. Tyreek Hill, if you want, just something that gets the Chiefs out ahead and gets Spencer Ware some extra run, but then involves Nyheim Hines. Something like that could be a bit sneaky.
Interesting. All right. I like it. Before we check out the Cowboys and the Rams, plenty of juicy contests waiting over on FanDuel for the divisional round. Both the Sunday and Saturday main slates have contests with $1 million in total prizes. Just $9.99 to enter, $9.99 to enter. First place nets $250,000. If you want to play in the full four game slate as we are doing, there is a $6 entry contest with $200,000 in total prizes in the NFL Rush. First place in that gets $40,000. And of course, there are single game slates available for all four games. For full contest details, head to FanDuel.com, check out the NFL lobby, FanDuel.com, and check out the NFL lobby for this divisional round. Cowboys at the Rams. The Rams here favored by 7.5 points. The total here is 49, and the wind speed's currently projected at 4 miles per hour. So nothing too brutal there. As far as the injuries go, a couple of notes here. Todd Gurley sat out the final two games of the regular season and may not be out of the woods just yet. He was limited in practice both Tuesday and Wednesday, meaning he may not be all the way back just yet. Head coach Sean McVay has said C.J. Anderson could be in the mix still, even if Todd Gurley does play. That is a concern to me. We'll talk about that in a second. things are a bit more troubling on the Cowboys side of things. Cole Beasley, Blake Jarwin, and defensive lineman David Irving have all missed practice the first 2 days of the week. Irving hasn't played since week 7. He's probably out, but Beasley and Jarwin will be names to monitor entering the weekend, especially with Allen Hurns also out with that gruesome broken leg. But regardless, Cowboys pass catchers may be a little bit banged up here. Brandon, what is your initial read on this game between the Cowboys and the Rams?
This one's a, I don't know, it's a little bit tough for me if I'm looking at it from a spread perspective. The Rams are favored by 7.5. I think that's about right. I want to say that they're going to win this one by double digits, but just the Cowboys defense is like okay enough where they could sort of muddy things up if Todd Gurley's not 100%, but they play him, if they do something like play Todd Gurley and CJ Anderson and just sort of get out of what got them to this point, it could be a little bit weird. But overall, the majority of my lineups and assumptions are going to be based on the fact that the Rams play this one from ahead.
I would assume the same thing there. And I think the big part of that revolves around these two teams and their home road splits, because the Cowboys on the road have not been good this year. The team has averaged 17.4 points per game on the road. If you look since the Amari Cooper trade, that does go up to 21.2 points per game, but that also includes 36 points on the road against the Giants in week 17 in a game where Zeke didn't play, Tyron Smith didn't play, Zach Martin didn't play, and the Giants had nothing to play for. So a bit skeptical of that number. I don't think that Dak is very good on the road. This offensive line has been pretty bad from a pass protection perspective, and that generally gets worse when a team is forced to go on the road. So that makes me like the Rams' defense and their ability to get after the passer this weekend. As far as the Cowboys' defense goes, they average 0.18 passing net expected points per dropback allowed on the road, and that is an above-average number. The average is 0.12. So quarterbacks against Dallas have been above average when Dallas has been on the road. When they've been at home, it's 0.05. They've allowed 18.9 points per game, but not as good when they're forced to leave Jerry's World. We know that Jared Goff has been much better at home than on the road, so I think overall, I do expect the Rams to control this game. That is not to say, though, that Zeke Elliott cannot be in play, because we know that his passing game role has been very good. If we look at them, excluding week 17, since Jeff Swaim got hurt, Zeke has 21% of the team's targets. He has 26% of the red zone targets. That means he'll be involved even if this game does favor the Rams. And Zeke, since the Cooper trade on the road, has averaged 26.5 FanDuel points per game, including a game where they got shut out. Like, he's been stupid still on the road, even though this team has not been good, just because he's getting so much volume. Since the Cooper trade, 22 carries, 7.1 targets per game. He's been crazy involved. So I think I can make the assumption, Brandon, that the Rams win this game, you know, go with Jared Goff and a pass catcher, but still put Ezekiel Elliott in that game stack. I know that's not a super hot take, but like, are you also okay with that?
Yeah, I think that's probably the number one way for me to play it. Last week, Ezekiel Elliott was second on the Cowboys in route rate at just a shade below 80%. Amari Cooper ran every route last week by comparison. Then Michael Gallup was behind Zeke at 73.5%. So Zeke was basically the second most involved receiver. He did trail Gallup 6 targets to 5. But I think that that's sort of the right way to sort of play this one. Assume the Rams get out ahead because of good efficiency from Jared Goff at home. I actually have sort of a similar thing with Goff at home, 0.38 passing net expected points per dropback, 9 yards per attempt. Now he struggled under pressure with a 58.1 passer rating, according to Pro Football Focus. That ranks him 22nd among 30 qualified quarterbacks. But overall, the Cowboys are 19th in sack rate. But since their bye, they're 28th in sack rate. They're 14th, though, so a little less bad in sack net expected points generated per dropback. But overall, this might not be a game where they get pressure on Jared Goff, so that puts Jared Goff at home and with some time to throw, and that's when we get the best of Jared Goff.
I would agree. And I think that that makes me like Jared Goff quite a bit for this week. He is $7,800 for the full four-game slate, and he is a home favorite. He is the cheapest home quarterback on this slate. Tom Brady is 82 for Sunday. Drew Brees, 87. Mahomes, 9,000. I think I'm just going to take those savings pretty often and go with Jared Goff, even though I think the play volume in this game will be lower and the matchup is not quite as good. Those savings can go a pretty long way. So I like Jared Goff. The one issue I have is stacking this game up if I decide not to go with Zeke, because like Amari Cooper's market shares have been very good. He's got 25% of the targets in the most relevant sample with 38% of the deep targets, 9% of the red zone targets. I'm not super worried about that, but the Rams defense with Aqib Talib this year has been very good. They've allowed 7.21 yards per attempt compared to 8.83 without Talib. That's according to the Quant Edge. And Talib, good to go for this game. He's had a couple of games since he came back. I don't really like Amari Cooper very much, but I think outside of Zeke, he is the second most logical game stacking candidate. So it's hard for me to stack this game. And I think that does lower my impression of Goff and the pass catches a little bit. Where do you see the Amari Cooper, Brandon?
Yeah, since Talib returned to some significant snaps in Week 14, the Rams defense ranks fourth in reception net expected points per target allowed to wide receivers. That is a very good mark, of course. With Cooper, I mean, he sort of comes through more often than not. I know that he's got those like laughable home road splits, but I think that maybe this is sort of a Michael Gallup kind of game stack week, just because it makes a little bit more sense that the Rams just focus on Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper, and then they let Michael Gallup sort of get free. Gallup had three of the five red zone targets last week. We know that he can get deep work. So I think that Michael Gallup is interesting to me at 5,700.
Yeah, I think Gallup would be more interesting to me if either Beasley or Jarwin were to sit, because they both have 11% of the targets in this sample. Beasley's at 15%. Beasley, in general, I treat like Ted Ginn, where like I use him at home in good matchups. So it's hard for me to get into Gallup, and I think that's another reason I have trouble stacking this game. But one thing that can alleviate that, for me at least, is spending down when stacking with Goff, and I can do so via either Josh Reynolds or Gerald Everett. Because look at the Rams since Cooper Kupp's injury. Reynolds has 19% of the Rams' targets, which is just a couple of percentage points behind Brandon Cooks. But Reynolds also leads the team in deep targets and red zone targets in that time, and Reynolds checks in had a salary of $5,600. I was concerned about Reynolds before because Everett in week 16, his snap rate went up. And Everett's snap rate stayed up in week 17. It was 62% despite not getting a target. But Reynolds was involved again in that game. So I'm actually okay with both Josh Reynolds and Gerald Everett here in this matchup. Everett is $4,800. And again, that can go a long way on this slate. Where do you rank the Rams pass catchers, Brandon? Are you trying to spend up on Woods or Cooks, or are you okay taking the savings with Reynolds and Everett?
So with Woods at 7,500, I mean, he's still the number one. Mm-hmm. And he's going to play from the slot. I kind of like that as just sort of a safety blanket scenario with Jared Goff. But I mean, I know that we know proverbially Brandon Cooks has like that slate changing upside, but I mean, he is behind Josh Reynolds. I actually have it a little bit different. 6.6 targets per game for Reynolds, 6.4 targets per game for Cooks since that Kupp injury. But either way, that's close enough where you really have to take a long, hard look at those targets and that price discrepancy of $1,800 between Cooks and Reynolds. And we know that Cooks, as you mentioned, getting more of the deep looks, getting more of the red zone looks. So I still prefer Woods as my number one, but yeah, I would probably go with Josh Reynolds over Brandon Cooks. And then as far as Gerald Everett goes, he ran 72% of the routes in week 17. The big issue for me with Gerald Everett is kind of that opportunity cost. Even on the two-game slate, you're going to be omitting Eric Ebron or Travis Kelce for Gerald Everett, which I can justify a little bit. But on that four-game slate, when you throw in Zach Ertz as well, even though I'm not super high on Zach Ertz, it's a little bit hard to plug in Gerald Everett unless you're just sort of punting the position and hope that the three main tight ends tank.
It's weird to talk about opportunity cost at tight end, given how bad the position has been, but there are good ones on this slate. So I understand what you're saying. With Brandon Cooks, I still think that I want to make sure I get him in there because I do still think he has a slate-changing upside. He had 20.7 points in week 17, five receptions, 62 yards, and a couple of tutties. Like, that can still happen. He can still go for a buck 50. Like, he had 159 receiving yards back in week two. That's still very much within his range of outcomes. And because of that, I want to make sure I get him in there. So I do like Brandon Cooks. I prefer Woods if I'm trying to, like, just straight up, I prefer Woods. But if I'm in a large field tournament and I know I need a complete difference maker, that's where I lean towards Brandon Cooks. Now let's finish up here, Brandon, talking about Todd Gurley, because based on the information we have now, it seems like he'll play in this game, but CJ Anderson will also get some work. We've got Zeke, we've got Alvin Kamara, we've got some cheaper running backs as well. How high do you think you can be on Todd Gurley for this weekend, knowing what we know right now as of Thursday morning?
This is like this is going to be the question, basically. If we're operating on this level of ambiguity entering this game, I don't know how you feel confident with sort of any real projection for Todd Gurley, especially with how well CJ Anderson has looked. CJ Anderson has more or less just played the Todd Gurley role. It's not, 100%, but it's not like they've been using a committee. So it's tough to think that the Rams would, again, turn to a committee in the playoffs whenever they have either a fully healthy CJ Anderson or a healthy enough Todd Gurley. So it's really difficult. And so to answer your question, I have to put him well behind Ezekiel Elliott this week, but I still think that he would be my second most popular running back.
Okay, so let's not project touches for Todd Gurley. Give me a projected snap rate for him, because I think if I'm looking at Todd Gurley, given what I know now, I would project his snap rate to be 75%. Would you go over or under that total?
I was thinking anywhere between like 67 and like 70. So a little bit under, but not substantially.
So basically, we'd be getting regular season Melvin Gordon role, like from a snap count perspective and a usage perspective.
Sure.
Okay. And I think that if I get regular season Melvin Gordon, because Melvin Gordon was crazy efficient, got work in the passing game, Gurley should get that too. I can stomach paying $9,000 for him. So I think I would also put him second. I think he's in the same tier as Kamara, and I'm very close to putting Kamara above Gurley, but I would put Gurley just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit above him. I think the way that I'm going to play this week, though, is like last week it was, I wound up going, I think, 90% Zeke. I think this week I'm not going to be as heavy on any one single running back. I'm going to go more mix and matchy with those three guys and with the cheaper players as well, and try to hover around like 50% exposure to a good number of guys as opposed to 90% on one guy. What about for you? What's your general running back strategy for this week?
Yeah, it'll be a little bit more dispersed this week than it was last week, but I still do think that Ezekiel Elliott will be pretty much like 70% for me. I think that I'll be just very high on Elliott because the Cowboys are not going to lean on anyone other than Ezekiel Elliott in this game.
I would be lower than that because I think there is a real path to the Cowboys just not scoring points, and that is a concern for me. So I'll be lower than 70, but he will still be one of my favorite running back plays for the week. Let's move now. Oh, wait, sorry. Favorite game stack, Brandon. I gotta get that in here. Favorite game stack from the Rams and the Cowboys, when you factor in all the factors that there are to consider for this week.
I have Jared Goff, Ezekiel Elliott, Brandon Cooks, sort of like a straightforward, like that would be my three-man stack.
Okay. I think mine is going to wind up being Jared Goff, Ezekiel Elliott, and Josh Reynolds. And the reason I'm going Reynolds is because I don't like this game as much from a pace perspective as – the Saints-Eagles game or the Chiefs-Colts game. So when I go here, outside of Zeke, I kind of am more inclined to go with value options, whether it be Reynolds or Everett. So I think my favorite game stack is still going to be Goff, Zeke, and Reynolds, just because I have that one.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. And the like I said, I would rank Cooks third, but the reason that I would put him first is if I'm stacking this game, that's because it's tournaments, and I would assume that Brandon Cooks is sort of third in ownership out of the three main receivers for the Rams.
I would agree with that too. And for game stacks, he's perfect, like from a, you know, what he does perspective. So I could get on board with that for sure. Do you have any crazy ones you want to toss out there?
I could do, so I don't think I'm going to play any Dak. I think I'm going to really concentrate my quarterback usage. So I'm going to stick with Goff, probably Todd Gurley, okay, in case anybody's concerned there. Still Ezekiel Elliott, but Michael Gallup.
Okay.
And then, I don't know, still maybe Cooks if I can afford that. But if not, you know, maybe that's the Gerald Everett spot.
Yeah.
Just the full-on Rams stack onslaught.
My other game stack could be, and this is a quasi-game stack, it's kind of cheating, but Goff, Gurley, Rams D, log out. Just assume that they put the pedal to the, they put the their foot on the throats of the Cowboys. I don't like using quarterbacks when I assume the other team can't keep pace, but like, I think there's a very real path to a defensive touchdown for the Rams here. So Goff, Gurley, Rams D, and then move on to the Sunday slate. So speaking of which, let's go to that Sunday slate. Starting off here with the Chargers and the Patriots, the line here, the Patriots -4 total, up to 47, it was 45 because there were some weather concerns for this game previously, but those appear to be gone for now. Wind speeds 4 miles per hour. The snow that was projected to be there, no longer there. Injuries for the Sunday game. Melvin Gordon got hurt in the wild card round, but is expected to play through a knee injury. Missed practice Wednesday with what head coach Anthony Lynn called a rest day for his sore knees. On the flip side, Hunter Henry was activated from injured reserve this week and was a full participant in practice. Seems like he should be good to go and get back out there at $4,900. Brandon, initial thoughts on this game. This is the hardest one for me to diagnose because I respect the Chargers a lot, but I also realize it's a tough assignment to go on the road for a third consecutive game and play a 105 game for a West Coast team yet again.
Yeah, this game also has the lowest total still, even though it's trending up with the snow concerns subsiding a bit. I feel like this is a game that if it were week 10, I would feel much more confident in the Chargers to win. But at this point, after what they've been through with the Patriots being able to rest up, it's a little bit harder. So yeah, I'm with you. I think this is pretty easily the toughest game for me to figure out. I can see the Patriots favorite at home, but I'm still thinking that maybe it should be closer to like the obligatory three than anything above that.
Yeah, I don't think it should be bigger than four, just because the Chargers have played really well on the road this year. They Rivers actually has averaged 0.26 passing and expected points per dropback on the road. That is just a tick lower than he is at home. And the team has actually averaged more points per game on the road, 27.2 on the road, including last week's game, compared to 25.6 points per game at home. Like, they don't have a home field advantage because they don't have a home crowd. So, like, they're kind of on the road every week, and they've played like it when they have been on the road. If we look at the Patriots' defense, though, they are a different animal when they're at home. They've allowed negative 0.05 passing net expected points per dropback at home compared to 0.18 passing net expected points per dropback on the road. They have pretty dramatic home road splits, partially because they have no pass rush. And I think that is less of an issue at home than it is on the road. Looking at the Patriots' defense, they have faced three top 15 passers in terms of passing net expected points per dropback at home. And those three quarterbacks had 0.03 passing net expected points per dropback in those games in New England. One of those guys was Patrick Mahomes, who played well. But overall, they've still limited opposing top passers. So as much as I would love to go Phillip Rivers and go Melvin Gordon in this spot and the Chargers defense, it's really hard for me to talk myself into it. I like the Chargers a lot, but I think the data does point towards the Patriots winning this game.
Yeah, the Patriots, just one of the best home defenses in football, especially if you include their rushing defense. I actually have them as the best a home defense of football based on net expected points per play, including passing and rushing. So that definitely is a problem for projecting big usage and big production from the Chargers. You throw in the Melvin Gordon not being close to 100%. That's problematic. And as much as we love Phillip Rivers, every now and again, he can have a Phillip Rivers spot where he just does not really show up. I don't necessarily think that'll be the case, but the Chargers kind of always a hard team for me regardless. But you throw in the fact that they're playing again on the road early on in the playoffs with potential weather concerns. I'm not just throwing my hands up and saying I don't know what to do, but it's a tricky one for me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Okay, let me make my pitch here for Melvin Gordon. Then you can say no and we can move on. But last week, played through that injury, still got 17 carries in that game and one target. He was essentially switching out for Austin Eckler on passing downs. That is a concern. But the Patriots' rush defense, they have allowed 4.71 yards per attempt to running backs with a 44% success rate when they've been at home. And both those worse than average numbers from a rush defense perspective, and that's by design. They want you to run the football against them because Bill Belichick understands that passing is more efficient than rushing. But I think the Chargers are good enough to take that bait and still succeed as an offense. I think that this is just an okay spot for Gordon if he gets in a full practice by Friday. Like, if he can't get in a full practice Friday, then it's a much harder sell for me. But because he continued to play in that game, and because when they need Melvin Gordon, he's going to be on the field. Like in that game against Baltimore, at the end of that game, when they were trying to get a first down to end the clock, Melvin Gordon was in the game. If this is a tight game, I think he'll be in there quite a bit. I think that is my sell for Melvin Gordon at $7,400. Will you bite or no?
I mean, I will. But again, he's closer to like a game stack only play than a priority play. And he's also one of the plays where if he were priced at $8,400 or something like that, and he was just considered in that range of the top three, of course, right, he would be almost impossible to justify. Right. He's really someone who I'm playing because of the price, and I don't ever care for that at all. I mean, the Patriots can give up production to running backs. They're 21st in target success rate allowed to backs. They're 25th in rushing success rate allowed. So that can't happen. But again, as we mentioned before, the Patriots really can put the clamps on up in Foxborough.
I would just note that if you assume that Austin Eckler or that Melvin Gordon is not 100%, Austin Eckler does get work in the passing game, and he is $6,200. So there you go. That would be a consideration for me if you assume that Gordon is not good to go. One thing that I think is interesting here is this Patriots offense. We have seen them in only two games since Josh Gordon left the team. And in those two games, Tom Brady had one horrendous game and one really good game. Overall, between those two games, 0.08 passing net expected points per drop back for Brady. That is a below average mark. And now he's facing, based on number fires metrics, the best pass defense that is still left in the field with Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, and that secondary. The Chargers are the best pass defense on this slate. So I think that's another reason why I'm still interested in Melvin Gordon, because I could see the Chargers winning this game. Looking at the Patriots' targets in those two games, Edelman had 16 targets. That's 29% of the team's targets. He had three deep targets, one in the red zone. I think Edelman is a guy I could be very into for sure. At $7,600, I've used him a lot recently, and I will not stop doing that. A cheaper way, though, could be Chris Hogan. He has had 11 targets in those two games. He's always played snaps. But with Gronk seemingly running in quicksand and with Gordon gone, Hogan is suddenly getting targets again. And he's $5,500, really tough matchup. But I think I can talk myself into Hogan. Gronk has just five targets in those two games. One of those was deep. James White has nine targets. Burkhead has seven. Philip Dorsett has five. So I think to me, Brandon, it's Edelman, massive, massive, massive gap. Hogan, Gronk. What about for you among the Patriots pass catchers?
Yeah, same for me. Chris Hogan had 148 air yards in week 17. He ran 97% of the routes. He's in like a weird, everyone loved Chris Hogan, but he's apparently not impressing Bill Belichick. And that's sort of why his role diminished so much. But He ran the same number of routes in week 17 as Julian Edelman, who of course is the number one option here if you're looking at the pass catchers. Behind those two in terms of route rate, it was Rob Gronkowski at 77%, and then James White at 62%, according to Pro Football Focus. I think that the hierarchy is just what you said. Edelman, huge gap. Hogan, probably huge gap as well, and Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, Gronk's a really tough sell in general. The Chargers have excelled against Travis Kelce. Gronk's not quite Travis Kelce anymore. What about Tom Brady for you in the context of the four-game slate? What, go ahead.
He's baby Kelce.
Yeah, it's switched. I like that. What about Tom Brady for you in the context of the full four-game slate? $8,200. Where does he sit for you compared to other quarterbacks?
Tough sell. I think four-game slate. Is that what you asked, four-game slate?
Yeah.
I think I have him fifth, basically, behind Mahomes, Breeze, Goff, and Luck.
I agree with that. Exactly. All right, Patriots running backs here, if we assume that they do indeed get ahead, which is possible. If we look at the game since Rex Burkhead came back, Sony Michel, 16.4 carries, 0.2 targets per game. He has one target in five games. James White, 4.8 carries, 5.8 targets. Rex Burkhead, 6.6 carries, 2.2 targets per game. Inside the 10-yard line, Michel has 10 carries, Burkhead has 4, and James Devlin has 3. All those have been right on the goal line. James White here, $7,400. Can't really get behind that personally, given that it's just too high. Michel is 66, and I could get behind that if I assume the Patriots win this game. So a Michel Patriots defense stack may work out. The Patriots defense, 47. I think they're overpriced, but if I assume they win, they and Michelle work. I can't go Burkhead. I'm not very high in any of these guys, Brandon, but I think that Michelle is the one guy I could see myself using based on the assumption that they win. What about for you at the Patriots backfield?
Yeah, I have a lot of identical notes to you as well. But one thing I do have is if you look at, you know, since Rex Burkhead returned, if you sort of average out their snap rates per game, Sony Michelle's at 37.3. James White is first at 40.7, and then Rex Burkhead is at 25.6. Michel, though, has played a sub 40% snap rate in the final three, but Michel is like the one guy more than anybody else who I care less about for snap rate, because when he's on the field, he gets a carry. He rarely gets a target, and that's kind of his thing. He's like a sort of like Garrett Blunt kind of a play. I don't know why they drafted him in the first round for that usage, but it's...
They could have gotten a receiver to get separation, but hey, you know.
I'm not Bill Belichick, so I don't know anything, but I do like Michelle. One of the problems, if we want to nitpick, is that the Chargers sort of overall adjusted for defense, pretty solid. Sixth in adjusted rushing success, adjusted rush defense based on number of fires metrics. They're 19th in success rate allowed to running backs, but they're 27th to backs out of the backfield in terms of target success rate. So, you know, there's the narrative that Bill Belichick plays to what the defense sort of is weakest with. That would imply maybe a James White game. Overall, he would be the odds-on favorite for me to lead in snap rate, but he's 7,400. That's pretty pricey. So I do think that straight up, I prefer Sony Michel to James White this week.
Yeah, it's $800 of savings, and I'll take that personally. All right, Chargers pass catchers before we get to our favorite stack here. Again, mentioned Hunter Henry expected to play here. Full practice Wednesday, $4,900. Any interest in Hunter Henry? And then what about the other guys here in Keenan Allen and Tyrell and Mike Williams?
Yeah, I mean, if Henry plays sort of what we talked about last week, when he's on the field, I would expect him not to be out there to pass block, but basically to be on the field to run routes, get some targets. If the Chargers get to the red zone frequently, that's when he would probably sort of make his impact felt the most. New England is very good against the deep ball, but we did see Mike Williams get three deep targets last week. He ran 80% of the routes to tie him with Tyrell Williams in terms of route rate. Keenan Allen was way out in front at 97%. I think that really, though, you still have to prioritize Keenan Allen, then Mike Williams, then Tyrell Williams, if you even want to risk that. So I think it's pretty straightforward for me when it comes to the Chargers pass catchers.
Yeah, I think Henry I could have some sprinkles of. Same thing as thought process as last week, maybe a little bit better outlook. The problem is there are more tight ends this week. Yeah. So that's, you know, the one downside of him. As far as Keenan Allen and Mike Williams go, I think Mike Williams has played really freaking well this year, and I think he deserves to get more volume. But the two areas of the field where he has excelled this year are in deep targets. He's been like among the best deep ball receivers in the league this year and in the red zone. The problem is that if you add Hunter Henry into the fold in the red zone, that's going to cap some of the really big appeal that Mike Williams has. He's also just $500 less than Keenan Allen. So I agree, I would go Keenan. But overall, I'm kind of sour on these pass catchers here for the Chargers because the Patriots' secondary is so good, because they can match up with guys in the slot as they showed against Juju a couple weeks ago. So kind of not overall super interested in this team, and I think that's a little bit of a concern for me. All right, game stack of this game, Brandon. I think I rank this game dead last of all four games. I would go the Rams, Cowboys just in front of it. I'm not going to have many stacks in this game. I just want to put that out there. But if you are stacking this game, where do you go?
Yeah, this is more like a two-game sort of slate stack. But Tom Brady, Sonny Michel, Julian Edelman, Patriots D, and then just sort of probably run it back with Keenan Allen, I guess, because okay. He would see the volume if the Patriots just throttle them.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, Chris Hogan, log out again. Let's just do it.
Yeah, that's like almost my sneakier stack, which is Rivers, James White, Melvin Gordon, Chris Hogan.
James White also makes sense in a game stack. I think the reason I like Rivers is because A, he's Phillip Rivers, and if you use him, you get to use the gifts on Twitter, which is always a really good draw for a player. But if you use Rivers with Gordon, and we assume that Gordon is good to go, which I'm assuming in the stack. Like, you're going to get a lot of the Chargers production via those two guys, and then you run it back with Hogan to safeguard yourself and just save money. So I can spend up for Travis Kelce, I can spend up for Alvin Kamara, I can spend up for Zeke Elliott, and I think that to me is really intriguing. If you go with those three guys, you're going to have salary to burn, and I think that to me is the biggest appeal of this game, getting some little value plays in there and paying up elsewhere. One of the places you can pay up is with the Eagles and Saints. Let's close up shop by talking about this one. Saints favored by 8 at home. The total is up to 51 points in this game, and not a lot of injuries to note here. The Eagles had some guys limited in practice on Wednesday, but they'll be good to go for this game. So, Brandon, what do you think here between the Saints and the Eagles? Can hashtag BDN keep it rolling?
Yeah, I mean, the head says the Saints just roll here, but the heart, just looking at Nick Foles and his calm demeanor, apparently he like does not react to anything. So I can get on board with that. I guess he's my spirit animal now, but
Chris Conley, come on, he's playing this weekend. You can't dump him now.
Well, I'm not trying to mention Chris Conley so that I can play 100%.
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah, we get accused of on Twitter all the time. Good, yeah. Feed the trolls, Brandon.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Nick Foles has been good. 0.51 passing net expected points per dropback, 9.6 yards per attempt since taking over. The Saints can get to the quarterback, their top 8 and sack rate and sack net expected points generated per dropback. You know, Foles has played mostly on the road. He hasn't been as good in that small sample, but this game could be close, or this could just be a huge blowout, which we saw between these two teams in week 11, but that was with Carson Wentz under center.
Yeah, I think that Wentz is okay. Wentz is better than Nick Foles. I'm not trying to step on your toes by saying that. He's better than Nick Foles. That game just got out of hand early, and I don't think it's an indicator of what we should expect.
Yeah, that game had the largest single game discrepancy between quarterbacks in terms of passing net expected points per dropback in the entire 2018 regular season, and it wasn't actually very close.
That was bad. I think the good thing for Nick Foles is that he's been getting rid of the ball quickly, which is why the Bears didn't really disrupt him, and that's the big strength of the Saints team too, is their pass rush, especially now that Marcus Davenport is healthy again. If we look at their defense overall, though, at home, They have allowed 12 touchdowns to 7 interceptions with 0.16 passing net expected points per dropback at home, along with 24.6 points per game. They've actually been better on the road. And I think if we look at them at home since their defense got better, I tend to view that as being since Eli Apple came over. They allowed 31 points to the Rams, 28 points to the Steelers. So I don't think we have to assume the Eagles get wiped in this game, even though it is the largest spread on the slate. So I kind of think they could potentially score some points. And that means we have to look at the Eagles pass catchers here. If we look at them in the wild card round, Alshon Jeffrey had 9 targets. 2 of those were deep. Golden Tate, outside of the game-winning touchdown, actually had 8 targets, and 3 of those were deep. Tate, in that wild card round, ran 27 routes, according to Pro Football Focus. Alshon Jeffrey ran 40. Nelson Agholor ran 38. And the 27 routes for Tate were his most since week 11. And you think of the Saints defense, they've got Marshawn Lattimore. He will be on Alshon Jeffrey, most likely. I kind of don't mind. I have not used Golden Tate in a very long time, Brandon, but he is $5,900. I don't mind using him in a game stack this week. What about for you with these Eagles pass catchers?
Yeah, I have actually highlighted that Nelson Agholor ran about 93% of the routes, which you already alluded to, but Golden Tate running 66% is pretty nice to see, especially with the Saints being most vulnerable to the slot. I think that if they keep it close, it's going to require something from Golden Tate, and with his price being where it is, it makes it easy to buy in because you can't spend up for all of the stud receivers this week. So I think that he's definitely on the short list for me this week.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too with Golden Tate, I forgot what I was going to say there. Anyway, literally no idea what I was going to say. Anyway, he's $5,900. Agholor, $62. Agholor benefits from the same thing I discussed with regards to the way this Saints defense. Oh, I remember. Okay, so you think about the Bears defense, and you could say that Golden Tate was a game plan play to get him out there against the Bears. But the Saints are kind of constructed similarly, where their strength is their defensive line. They've got good linebackers, and you want to try to spread the field out a little bit. So I could see this being another game where they use Tate in a similar fashion. That's why I do like him. I don't mind Agholor. I could see some Jeffrey. The one person I am skeptical of here, Brandon, might actually be Zach Ertz, because he's gotten a lot of targets with Nick Foles, but he hasn't gotten any work down the field, essentially, ever since Nick Foles took back over. And that, to me, is a major red flag, especially when on the 4-game slate, he is $100 less than Travis Kelce, and he is $8,800 more than Eric Ebron. I have value options in Hunter Henry and Gerald Everett. I feel like I need to get some obligatory Zach Ertz shares, but I don't really want to. Where do you view Ertz relative to other tight ends?
Yeah, it's really obligatory for me, and that's it. The Saints are 10th in target success rate allowed to tight ends. They have not let a tight end reach 15 FanDuel points yet this year. Only 3 have gotten past 8.3 FanDuel points. All 3 of the games where a tight end had scored in double digits, though, were in week 14 or later. So that's something, but overall, they've been very good against tight ends. I mean, it's so hard, like you mentioned, that $100 difference. It's really, I guess, going to be maybe I'll build the same lineup, duplicate it, and swap in Zach Ertz over Travis Kelce just for the ownership leverage. But that's really kind of the only thing that's getting me to play Zach Ertz, is just the sort of the fear of missing out on a big game from him.
Final thing I want to mention before we move on here to the Saints, Darren Sproles, $5,400 last week in the game against the Bears.
Revenge game.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Oh, you're right. Wow. Oh, man. All right. 100% Darren Sproles. The reason I want to go 100% besides the revenge game is that he had 13 carries and 3 targets last week. And I think that game is our best sample to draw from, because they were not out in front of that game. I would not expect them to be out in front in this one. But Sproles also played 56% of the snaps. Wendell Smallwood played 41%. So even though they had 3 targets apiece, Sproles is out there more often. I think I would expect the same thing. So Darren Sproles, to me, along with Golden Tate, makes a lot of sense in the game stack. Are you cool with Darren Sproles?
Yeah, the Saints are very good against the rush. They're fifth there, but they're 26th in target success rate allowed to running backs. So that speaks to Darren Sproles. And just one more thing before we move on from the Eagles. Alshon Jeffrey gets a lot of the deep looks here, and the Saints are 28th against deep passes in terms of adjusted yards per attempt. So just keep that in mind.
As far as the game plan goes, we kind of saw the Eagles' game plan around running back targets against the Saints the first time. In that game, Josh Adams, 6 targets, and he has 6 total targets since that game. So I could see this being very much a Darren Sproles game. Moving now to the Saints, I want to talk about Alvin Kamara first because I like him a lot this week. And if you've listened to the podcast the whole year, you know I'm generally lower on Alvin Kamara than other people. But
You're lower on him than I am. You can say that much.
Yeah, that's for sure. But Kamara last year in the playoffs, I think the Saints unleash him most when they need to win. That's kind of the way I've handled Kamara. I use him in big games, don't tend to use him in other games. Last year during the playoffs, his snap rate had been around 50% during the regular season, but in the wild card round, it was 64% of snaps, 10 carries, 3 targets. In the divisional round, the Minneapolis Miracle, the Minnesota Miracle, I don't know. Regardless, Kamara played 66% of the snaps, 11 carries, 7 targets. He was getting work in the passing game. Mark Ingram really was not, and Ingram's snap rate went down, and Kamara already has had a really good role recently. If we look at him from weeks 13 to 16, he averaged 11 carries and 8 targets per game with 27% of the Saints' total targets and 28% of the red zone targets. That is why I have him either very close to Todd Gurley or above him. How high are you on Alvin Kamara, Brandon?
Yeah, Kamara's my sort of, I guess, 2A, I would consider him, if not maybe 2B with Todd Gurley, with Ezekiel Elliott being the number one. I guess at this point with the ambiguity for Gurley, I would put Kamara as the 2A. But I do think that this is a week, even though it's 4 games, even though there are a lot of sort of enticing what-if plays, it's a week to still prioritize Ezekiel Elliott and another high-priced running back. And I guess right now it's going to be Kamara as my second option there.
Yeah, I'll go back and forth between him and Gurley quite a bit. It depends. If Gurley gets into full practice on Thursday, I would feel better. I think that's the way I would say it. But going to keep tabs on him, and I'll go back and forth on that probably until Saturday afternoon, deciding which one I prefer to use. I think my number two quarterback this week behind Patrick Mahomes is Drew Brees, because Brees, I know we have this narrative around he struggled the second half of the season, but they played 3 straight road games. They were at Dallas, at Tampa Bay, at Carolina, and he struggled in all 3 of those. But when they went back home against Pittsburgh, the dude had 326 passing yards in that game, looked great again, and Terron Armstead should be healthy here. Armstead came back in week 16, but he did not play every snap. I think he was at 57% of the snaps in that game, limited in practice the first day this week on Wednesday. But when they've had Armstead, their left tackle, on the field, the Saints have averaged 8.84 yards per attempt. That is compared to 7.37 yards per attempt without him, according to the Quant Edge. So they're a totally different team when they have when an all-pro left tackle comes back, a team plays better. I would assume Armstead plays. If he does, I assume the Saints play well. They have averaged 37 points per game at home this year, excluding week 17 when they sat Breeze. Breeze has 21 touchdowns, 1 pick at home. I have Breeze as my number two quarterback. What about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty sizable gap. I mean, of course, we're saying that we prefer the most expensive quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, as our number one, and the second most is our number two. But it's really hard to make a case for anybody else with the upside of Mahomes and Breeze. I have a lot of I just assume that I'm going to be trying to build my lineups around those two quarterbacks. Breeze at home has just been so, so good. Almost a 65% passing success rate, which is like a completion rate level, which is just insane. 9.5 yards per attempt. The Eagles have so many issues in the secondary. They're 21st in passing net expected points per dropback allowed since week 8. And I actually have the Saints, even without factoring out week 17, as the top home offense by expected points per play.
Probably by a decent margin too, I'd assume there, given how good they've been at home. So I think that Breeze makes a lot of sense. I want to talk to you about Ted Ginn, though, because Ted Ginn is minimum price on FanDuel. He is $4,500. Came back in week 16, and he ran 20 routes per Pro Football Focus, which is not a huge number, given that I believe Keith Kirkwood ran more than him. But yes, on those 20 routes, Ted Ginn had 8 targets, including 5 at least 16 yards downfield. He had 4 red zone targets earlier this year before his injury. He was one of the players who sat at week 17. That to me implies that they do value this guy and what he brings to this offense. Ginn is $4,500, Brandon. And like I talked to Michael Gallup, how I view him as being similar to Ted Ginn, where I use him when he's at home in a good matchup. Ted Ginn is at home in a good matchup and minimum freaking price. Where do you sit on Ted Ginn?
Yeah, so for these playoff slates, I sort of have the luxury of building out my notes before looking at price. And I like Ted Ginn before looking at the price. And then yeah. Minimum salary is very, very interesting. Yep. The 5 deep targets, the 8 overall targets. Of course, we don't need him to play elevated snaps or run a lot of routes to come through. The Eagles, 20th in adjusted yards per attempt allowed on deep throws this year. So they can definitely get torched at home down in New Orleans on that turf. I do have to mention that Keith Kirkwood was actually second in week 16 in route rate with 67%. He had two of deep targets there. Traquan Smith ran 38% of the routes, had just one target. Ted Ginn was 48%. So, it could be any one of those three.
Sure.
But you have to prioritize Ted Ginn, I think.
I agree. So I think that Ginn to me is a really attractive guy. He could, because I think people will be on Ted Ginn, could lower a bit the ownership or the interest in Michael Thomas. And I'll use Thomas for sure. He against Pittsburgh, 13 targets, 109 yards, and a touchdown in that game. We saw him get 211 against the Rams earlier this year. And I think that having Ted Ginn will help alleviate some coverage a bit on Michael Thomas because Ginn can ensure the defense is back on its toes. And we saw Thomas just beast out earlier this year when Ted Ginn was healthy. So I do like Michael Thomas a lot. And I think that among the very expensive wide receivers, Thomas is still my favorite, but I will be okay taking the savings on Ted Ginn for sure.
Yeah, Thomas is my number one receiver for the week. Of course, I realize he's the most expensive, or he's tied with Tyreek Hill for the most expensive receiver. But the case for him is so easy to make with his high volume, with such a good matchup here. I really have no issues with Michael Thomas, but I mean, just getting caught up on Ted Ginn. And you make a great point. I think a lot of people will be fine with Ted Ginn at minimum salary because he opens up so much.
Right.
That will lead to lower ownership than Michael Thomas should be at.
All righty. So before we close up for today, Brandon, got to get your go-to game stack for the Eagles and for the Saints. Where are you going here? If you want to give both your fun one and your main one, go ahead.
The main one would be Breeze, Thomas, Ginn, Alshon because of the deep targets. But a sneakier one, probably Breeze, Sproles. I was still want to play Michael Thomas if I'm stacking this one up. Yeah. And maybe Kirkwood.
Okay. My and favorite is
throwing Golden Tate. Why not?
Yeah, why not? I like Breeze, Kamara, Ginn, Sproles because then it forces me to not decide about Todd Gurley. I can just plug in Zeke as my third running back in the flex and go with that. And it allows you to get Travis Kelce because you're saving so much money with Sproles and Ginn. So I do like that stack. I'm not opposed to going with studs in this game because I like it so much. But that's why I like Kamara in there. But I think when I can save salary and still get exposure to a game I like a lot, I'm okay with doing that for sure. So Brandon, a fun slate here, the full four game slate. And honestly, the two game slates are fun too. So an interesting weekend here. I'm pumped to see how things go down. I just want to watch the football. I know I'll be sweating lineups too, but like this is just going to be a fun weekend for some DFS and for real world football too.
Yeah, and football Twitter is always pretty lit with all these island games. Everyone's watching. Everyone's sharing their takes for better or worse. But that's always fun to follow along, both on your, you know, FanDuel teams and on Twitter.
It's fun until Jared Goff throws a bad pick. Then it becomes really not fun for me, and I start to hate my life very quickly. So, Jared, please, my friend, save me. Save me from all of that. Once again, we're going to be coming back next week to preview the Conference Championships Act. Podcast will also be on Thursday at the same time. We're doing PGA podcasts once again. So those are back every Tuesday. You can get those by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter and want to see your excited reactions when Chris Conley catches his third touchdown on Saturday, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I'm at Jim Sannes, JimSannes. You can find me tilting Jared Goff there. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, P-O-D-S, as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with your DFS lineups for the divisional round, and have fun watching what should be some awesome football. We'll talk to you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.